Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
Take that sticker off the hat, bro. This ain't the 1980s. Oh, we'll rock that sticker on there.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a great day. It's low-hanging fruit today. Take the sticker off. I mean, do you not want me to tell you to take the sticker? You want to, you got cameras in here like once a week now. Dude, TV cameras in here once a week on you. I'm just telling you.
You keep on bringing stuff up on the air with no context for our listeners.
What do you mean? You had a hat on your sticker. I mean, a sticker.
Listen to you. You're just a train wreck.
Got a TV camera in here once a week. Like, what do you mean? I don't need to say anything else. Just telling you. Like, you're a prima donna now. You're talking about you ate a gyro here recently at the club level.
Oh, my God.
Your club level gyro is unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
You wouldn't know about that, Stokely. I was at the club level. Oh, they make it right there for you. Fresh and
just
good.
Just the worst. We do have our friends from Denver 7 in here. Going to take some shots of us in a piece that will air a little bit later today. Talk about Nazem Kadri. You know, the big story. So these guys are springing
into
action.
Am I going to be on here too? Do I need to put on a hat? Am I going to be on TV?
Is there something just for your face?
Are you getting me on TV or not?
Can we put like a bag on his head? Yeah. You're going to end up being in the shot. So put your free advertising for Peyton back on your head.
There you go. That's right.
He knows. That Sweetens Cove, Tennessee bourbon hat.
Yeah.
You're just
like it?
I do.
Because you were hating on it at the beginning of the show. And I said, okay, well, screw you. You're not going to get one then.
And then I pivoted.
You're like, oh, never mind. I'm sorry. I do like it. So which one is it?
One of the most respected voices in football put out his annual preseason power rankings. Lots to unpack. By the way, we're going to be joined by DMAC here, I believe, here at 12:15.
I love it.
Who had boots on the ground in St. Louis.
Is he back?
I believe so.
Great.
Because I heard him at the airport this morning.
Okay, he did a great job. He killed it. Love it.
So we'll transition to that here in just a couple minutes. But I said going into the last break, one of the most respected voices in football put out his annual preseason power rankings. Prepare yourself. There's a lot to unpack.
Okay.
When I say one of the most respected voices in football, I am talking about a longtime writer who is...
Peter King. How about that?
Around this time every year, Peter King puts out his preseason power rankings. The draft is in the rearview mirror, free agency, so the schedule has been put out. So, you know, obviously you get through training camp, see what happens from a health perspective, but... The season's coming into focus here as we're almost into June. So I have Peter King's power rankings. And before we start, I want to thank our listeners and Ken Carl for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day.
Ken Carl making an appearance.
The Buffalo Bills are number one.
Okay.
And I think you're seeing the Bills number one on most of these lists.
I mean, they are a trendy team this year, and they should be. They got Josh Allen. They went toe-to-toe with Kansas City. If they didn't fall apart on defense, they probably won the Super Bowl, probably.
I think so, too.
But they are that team that's a complete football team heading into this year. So, yes, they should be at the top, I think, too.
When you think about teams that could be number two on this list, who comes to mind?
Oh, number two. I mean, you can't forget about the champions. Can't forget about the Rams, right? You got the Packers. They're still going to be a good football team. Mm-hmm. You got Aaron Rodgers. We're just going to go through a little bit. I mean, Tampa Bay, Tom Brady. You know, I don't know if you realize he should have been the MVP last year.
Some say that.
A lot say that, and anyone with a working brain and working eyes say that. And but he got screwed. They have to be in the conversation, Zach. Kansas City will be a little bit different without Tyreek Hill, but you know, will they be more of a complete football team? Now, what will they look like? I mean, they are in the conversation also. I mean, those are the teams to the top of my head.
I would say the same exact thing if you asked me that. Think of the Rams, you think of the Packers, you think of the Chiefs, and you think of Tampa Bay. that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. None of those teams are number two on this list.
Ooh.
All you got to do is look outside to the neighbor to the right of you. Peter King has the Chargers as the second best team in football entering this season. Now, I'm not going to read through the whole thing of his explanation, but he outlines exactly why he believes that's the case. That's the sort of company that the Broncos are keeping in the AFC West.
Okay, look, I mean, the Chargers are going to be a darn good football team this year. So whether you have them at 2 or 6 or 5, wherever.
Better pack a lunch.
Right. They should be good. I mean, Herbert's going into his third year, okay? And it's his second year in this offense.
Right.
Second year with Staley. And they made a bunch of additions this year, too.
They did.
Okay, they were on the fringe. They screwed it up last year. We all know that. Chargers, Raiders, you know, I mean, one of those teams had to screw it up.
It was the Chargers.
Shocking
they
that
tried
it wasn't
hard.
The Raiders,
yeah.
Right? But somehow, some way, the Chargers screwed it up more than the Raiders. Year three now for Herbert. It should be, he should be hitting his stride. So you're telling me that team is number two on the list? And, like, you're looking at it? Okay. I'm not going to sit there and argue with Peter King on that at all. You look at that football team, that's a well-rounded football team with a coach that ain't scared, which is a good thing. Now, sometimes he does some crazy things, but he ain't scared.
Right.
He ain't scared to fail, and I love that. And hopefully Nathaniel Hackett is a little bit like that also.
Number three on this list is the Kansas City Chiefs. So here we are out of the gate. According to Peter King, the best teams in football entering the 2022 season – two of the three are in the AFC West. You get to number four.
That's too high for me.
Too high?
I would drop them down a little bit more. I think they're taking a step back. And now I think the Tyreek Hill, I think they just aren't quite the same football team. They've gone so deep in the playoffs. And we saw them last year struggle early in the season.
You know what they're going to have to do to a certain degree? We talked about this after the Super Bowl embarrassment for the Rams a few years ago when they scored like 3 points against the Patriots. You're going to have to reinvent yourself. And it feels like to a certain degree, even despite the same coach and quarterback, they're going to have to reinvent themselves offensively.
It will be different, certainly. I mean, you lost the guy.
Yep.
You lost the engine. Now, Patrick Mahomes, right, you need a quarterback. But the guy that makes that thing go, go, go is Tyreek Hill. What do you look like without him? So certainly you have to do some things a lot different.
We're talking about Peter King's annual preseason power rankings. You get to number four, it's the world champion Rams. You get to number five, it's the Green Bay Packers. You get to number six, it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You get to number seven, it's the Bengals, who were just in the Super Bowl. You get to number eight, it's a hopefully healthy Ravens team. You get to number nine, it's the Eagles, which
wow.
is the highest I've seen them. Again, he lays it out in long form on his Football Morning in America piece that gets released every Monday, so you can feel free to read that.
But I'm not going to knock that, though, because they took a big – I mean, they shocked me this year, and they came in here and whooped the Broncos.
They did.
I'm not going to sit here and argue that one either.
And then you get to the final 10th number in the top 10. It's the San Francisco 49ers, who the Broncos will see week three. So if the Broncos not in Peter King's top 10 –
Okay, that's fine.
Then you get to number 11. It's New Orleans Saints. Okay, still waiting for the Broncos' name to be called. You get to number 12. It's the Titans. Okay. You get to number 13.
Hey, it's getting late early here. Let's go, Peter.
Trigger warning.
Uh-oh.
Trigger warning.
No. You better not say that team over there in Vegas. You better not. You're just joking.
I said going in the break, there's a lot to unpack. According to Peter King's annual preseason power rankings, he has the Las Vegas Raiders at 13, one slot ahead of the Denver Broncos at 14. Two things here. He's got the Raiders ahead of Denver, but also he's got Denver just kind of at the middle of the pack.
Well, we know.
We don't.
We know.
We don't.
We all know here in Broncos country. Zach doesn't know, but we know that that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. I don't care what they did last year. They, you know, sometimes even, you know, the unluckiest of person, my buddy, Bubby, unlucky, I told you. I mean, you know, every time he shows up and he come to a football game or something, he always have like a brace, crutches, something, steps off the curve, rolls his ankle. I mean, just like, Bubby, what'd you do this time?
Bubby.
Even Bubby gets lucky sometimes.
Bubby, yeah. From the Bayou.
Yeah, Bubby Schexenider.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Hey, even those guys get lucky every once in a while. You're just dumb into luck, right? I mean, just like, oh, I got lucky this time.
Over-under on Bubby, 9.5.
Over-under what?
Teeth.
Teeth. Hey, but even Bubby got lucky every now and then, and the Raiders got lucky last year. But the Raiders will Raider. There's no chance. No chance that the Raiders have a better season next year than the Denver Broncos.
No chance.
No chance, Zach.
What will you do? What's on the line here?
I will say I was wrong.
You've been speaking so loudly and bombastically for months now.
I will say I was wrong. And I was right last year. I was on the right side of all of this when I made the grand
proclamation. You were never on the right side of it, ever.
And
we made a song for you. You embarrassed yourself.
Wasn't the first time. The reason why it didn't come to fruition was because our quarterback got hurt the week before.
And I gave you an offer to get out of the deal.
Do you think I'm going to back down from that, Zach?
Discretion's the better part of valor
sometimes. When you go down the road, even if it might be the wrong way, you got to keep going. You can't turn around. Especially when you're talking about the Raiders. So if Russell Wilson plays the whole year, the Broncos will have a better record than the Raiders.
I believe that to be true. And I do think for the first time in years, the Broncos are going to beat the Raiders. But I don't want to speak so flagrantly, bordering on arrogance, when you talk about a team that you literally haven't beaten in years. This is not me
it's
being...
It's a new year. New year, Zach.
You're right.
I'm not worried about that.
You're right.
Stop living in the past.
I'm not living in the past. I just don't know what the present is.
Present is Broncos whipping up on the Raiders.
I hope you're right. I know they're going to beat them one time. Is this going to be a split scenario? That's the only question. I know that they're going to beat them one time this year.
He shouldn't have the Raiders in front of the Broncos.
Tom Petty had a line. Even the losers get lucky sometimes.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I mean, me and Tom, eye to eye. That's what I'm saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was last year for the Raiders. You follow me?
But they were active. They've made additions as well.
Yeah,
they have a big X factor. They have a big X factor as well. The Josh McDaniels thing. Like, how is this going to go?
It's going to go better than, you know, we can sit here and bash him all we want. But, look, he's a different person. He said it. And he's actually looked in the mirror and learned. And, like, he's taken ownership of it. So, I think he's going to be much, much better. And if you ask anybody that played for him about his football acumen and, like, just being a football coach, he was really good. He was. Knew his stuff, was a really good football coach, knew how to make adjustments, all of those things. He was just a complete disaster with all that other stuff.
Yeah,
just being a good human person.
Yeah,
and just relating. And he has grown from that. So he'll be much better than what he was here. But the problem is you just have the black hole just weighing you down.
Mm.
Right? You can try to improve and make all these adjustments, but then in the end, when you are part of the Raiders, you have that black hole just weighing you down, and you just can't get out of it. You just can't get out. It doesn't matter if it's in Vegas. Doesn't matter if it's in that dump of Oakland, which is a complete dump. Or if it's in L.A. Doesn't matter. The black hole will just suck you in.
Our good buddy D-Mac has been knocking the coverage out of the park. He was in St. Louis for the last couple days, and he's with us here now. D-Mac, last night, we couldn't have seen this coming. There was a lot of circumstance and factors surrounding last night's game, death threats, racist comments, to the point where Nazem Kadri literally had to get escorted to the ice by law enforcement, and then to follow on the heels of all that context, a legendary sports moment, his first career hat trick. What was it like being in the building last night?
Well, I actually asked Bednar, could you believe what was going on? Because it was like that. You couldn't believe it. It was stunning. And for us in the, you know, Denver media, we were all looking at each other like, is this really happening? It was surreal. It was quiet. You know, you could hear a pin drop, no doubt about it. It was so quiet with the crowd because they were just taking out of it completely. So, fellas, it was one of the most amazing sports moments I've been around. Because the story behind it was so remarkable. So it was quite a thing to witness. And then Kadri spoke afterwards. And he did say, Berube, Craig Berube gave them bulletin board material said that actually did work against the Blues big time.
D-Mac, now the game last night, I mean, the Avs had it. It was wrapped up. It was over. I was celebrating. I'm like, big time win. All of a sudden, the two late penalties in the second, and then becomes a 4-3 game. What was it like in that building when they just took all the momentum heading into the third, and it was a 4-3 game?
Well, you know, I started looking around because the game started so late. You know, it started at 8:50 p.m., and I'm assuming people got jobs out there, and I was really at 4-1. Like,
I don't know, it's St. Louis.
When they decided – When they decided to jump on Perron, jumped on Kadri and all that shenanigans, the 5-on-3. I was like, oh, I guess they gave up. You know, that's it. And Kadri after the game said, well, if they do that, we'll make them pay, which they did. And so I think that was kind of just a little sloppy moments, fellas, in all honesty, by the Avalanche. So the crowd got back into it. Okay, they didn't leave. Yet they got back into it, but at no point were the Blues ever outplaying the Avalanche. I don't care if they did lead 1-0; they certainly weren't outplaying them. And you got a couple of power play goals. That's on the power play. There was at no moment that I thought the Avalanche were in any risk. It just felt like, well, just give it a little bit more time, and they'll pile back on as well. And that's more or less what they did. The Avs are just such a superior team to them. And not that they're a bad team. The Avs are just flat out better. So the crowd got back into it and was quickly taken out. And at the end of the game, they're announcing the three stars. And there's Kadri being announced as the first star. And the, you know, 15 people still there started booing again just with an announcement of his name. But it didn't work. It fired up the Avs. And then there's another story completely. You know, with everything Kadri and his family were going through, which I've seen. I don't know if you guys have seen some of the posts that they've copied.
Are you lowering your voice? We can all hear you.
Okay. Now I'm being yelled at by the airport. I literally stood in a corner.
Tell her to lower her voice because we can hear her.
Not bothering anybody. No, I know you can help me. That's why I'm standing in a corner away from everybody. You can just leave the airport.
Yes, leave the airport.
She actually walked all the way across the entire thing here. I'm in the middle of nowhere to yell at me. So you just got that. Congratulations. Wow.
You just kind of naturally bring that on. There's just this naturalness about Darren McKee.
You would laugh. I'm literally standing in a corner to try to stay out of people's way. And she came over to yell at me. And now my wife is looking at me like she wants to kill me.
Oh, gosh. All right.
Great talking to you, fellas.
Oh! Are you out? Okay.
I'm not done. No, I don't care. I'll be loud anywhere I want.
Okay. There you go.
I can scream into a corner as loud as I want.
D-Mac, let me ask you this: you've been doing sports talk in Denver for nearly two decades. Where does last night? Like, we've seen cool sports moments. Nolan Arenado on Father's Day. That was a cool, awesome sports moment that's memorable. Last night had real stakes to it. On the heels of all the context that we know and understand, for Kadri to follow up with a hat trick on the road in the playoffs, given your context, where does that stack up in terms of Denver playoff moments?
Well, awesome, okay, first of all, because what an unbelievable story. But the context why it was such an unbelievable story is just such a, I don't know, fellas, it's a sadder twist to it. And like talking to Eric Johnson and Darcy Kuemper after the game and Bednar, you know, they're really, really proud of Kadri and everything that he accomplished. I think, you know what, fellas, I think we'll feel the full impact Wednesday at Ball Arena when the crowd, and what a crowd that's going to be.
Oh.
We'll get to salute Kadri and the team. Boy, talk about one not to miss. So I think what the Avs are feeling right now is sort of us against the world sort of deal there, hanging out in St. Louis, and let's hope we don't have to go back there, right? I think the real story and the real emotion will come full circle on Wednesday, and how the Avs don't win by 5 or 6 goals on Wednesday is beyond me. Are you kidding? These guys are freaking pumped. They didn't need this because nobody needs this, okay? Nobody needs this type of crap. All right, but they have gone through this together, and it's a moment that you can't just replicate anywhere else. and they not only have survived it, they've thrived through it. So it's a hell of a thing to go through together as a team. And, you know, Kadri, you know, how much good things can you say about that dude and what he did? It's just amazing.
Yeah, last one, D-Mac. I don't want you to get yelled at again, but what did you make of the cheap shots? Obviously, Perrone. I don't know if that's how you – whatever.
He's been fined $5,000, by the way.
That's it.
That's it.
Clown move. I mean, a guy that was defenseless, back turned to you, check him a couple times to the ground, you jump on top of him. Do you expect to see more of that in Game 5? How do you think this thing plays out?
That's a good question, Stoke. I don't think so. I think the Blues have seen what happens if you do that. And so by doing that, what do you accomplish? You know, I think the quote of the entire playoff run here, it's not about ego, it's about winning. And Bednar had said it's been repeated several times now. And so gooning it up against the Avs, that doesn't work. And by the way, like, I know everybody's thinking, like, play McDermott. I got nothing against McDermott, okay? I like Dermy. Think he's a good dude and everything. But the Avs got enough guys that can handle their business, that give you better hockey options. And we saw Alex Newhook, for example, play where he hasn't played. And Burakovsky took a seat, and they're just trying to mix things around. You saw what they did with the Lions, with Lekkonen, Landeskog, and McKinnon on the top line. That was brand new. So I don't think so. I don't think first of all, the energy is going to be all with the Avs. I expect a pretty wide open game. The Blues haven't been able to develop any kind of offense whatsoever. So I expect the Avalanche to come out on fire. I expect them to fly around. It's nice. You get an extra day off, by the way. So, no, I expect the Avs to finish off the Blues. And I think the Blues are into the 1-2-3 Cancun mode at this point.
Well, I hope you're right, D-Mac. Great job out there in St. Louis. Can't wait to have you back here in Denver to listen to that first-person point of view. We appreciate your time. We'll hear from you soon.
Okay, guys, I'm going to my car now. I just can't believe that just happened. I'll talk to you. Hey, you got
classic.
Patrick Saunders at the drive-thru, and
yes.
Me getting yelled at
right.
To the airport.
Yes.
You
yes.
Get it all.
Yes.
We've had some classic
oh
moments.
My gosh.
Thanks, D-Mac.
All right, there he goes, D-Mac, live from St. Louis, courtesy of our friends at Superbook Sports. Speaking of Superbook Sports, proud sponsor of the Mile High Hoops podcast, recorded yesterday, reacting to the Tim Connelly news that the team president is headed to Minnesota. If you want to hear a more expansive, dedicated conversation about that, you can hit it up at denverfan.com or wherever you get your podcasts on.
I can't believe he got yelled at.
That was hilarious.
Yelled at. Was he in Denver?
No, I believe he's in St. Louis, still trying to leave St. Louis. And a woman come across the airport to yell at him.
Yeah.
That's classic.
Too good.
All right. The Broncos are back practicing. One guy was there but not available. Why? Take a dive into it next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
The Broncos are back practicing yesterday, today, I believe on Thursday, I want to say. And maybe we'll hear from a couple of different Denver Broncos made available to the media here a little bit later this afternoon. But there was one Bronco who was there but not available. Why? Talking about Jerry Jeudy, who had, Nathaniel Hackett was asked about it after practice. And this is what the head coach said.
Making sure everybody's good. Yeah, we're just making sure everybody's good.
Okay. Just making sure everybody's good. That's pretty abbreviated. Apparently, he had back tightness. Obviously not ideal. Not saying it's a big deal, but it's not ideal for the closest representation of football to be picking up right now, and he's not available. I don't know if there's some sort of tweak during a workout or something like that.
Who knows? I don't know. It's off season, OTAs. Would you like him to be out there? Yeah, of course.
But we said yesterday this was the time of year he was starting to cultivate that on-field chemistry with Teddy Bridgewater that became obvious through training camp and even the first half of the first game against the Giants before getting hurt. don't think it's a big deal at all, like at all, but I do think it's just a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's certainly a missed opportunity. I mean, you have a chance to go out there and get work in with your new quarterback, your new offense, get comfortable, all those things, start laying the foundation. You're not doing it. You got something with your back. I don't know. Is it just sore? Did he wake up? Did he do something working out last week? Or don't know. Will it be another week? Will it be just one day? We don't know.
The reason I think this is, again, not to emphasize it's like some sort of big deal, but backs are tricky. We know that. We're experiencing that firsthand with Chris Bryant, who we will circle back to at a certain point in time because there's an update on that front that's just not good. Okay, so we'll just follow this. We'll just continue to follow it.
Yeah, I mean, I wake up a lot and I have a sore back. Woke up this morning. I was hitting golf balls yesterday. I had a sore back. Right? I mean, sore. So is it just a sore back? Is there some kind of, you know, anything there? I mean, a sore back's nothing.
No.
Right? I mean, mine's nothing. It's just sore from just what Same. I did yesterday, right?
Same. Oftentimes wake up with it. I'm carrying you for 5 days a week, but probably has something to do with it. But
maybe a little something. But
it's a back.
It's a back. And backs are, man, you never want a bad back.
We see it with Michael Porter Jr.
I mean, you know, you don't want a bad back. You don't want a bad anybody that's had a bad back knows you don't want a bad back.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Hopefully it's nothing and it's just a little bit of sore back, a baby back.
Baby
you know, like
back.
Your baby hamstring. Mm. Hopefully it doesn't last as long as your baby hamstring, which I think we're going on now 3 years with the baby hammy. So hopefully it doesn't last that long.
This is not a perfectly attended OTA. There's a handful of guys missing. Nathaniel Hackett, after practice, talking about the voluntary nature of OTAs.
Yeah, you know, this is all voluntary. You know, it's one of those things, and the great thing is a lot of those guys, they communicate and talk with me. That's all I can ask. And whoever's out here, we're going to coach them and have some fun, and those guys reach out to me, and it is voluntary.
You know, those coaches are trained. Don't screw around and,
nope.
You know, call anyone out for not being there. It is voluntary. That's got to be your message. Are you happy that guys aren't there? Of course you're not. You want everyone there, certainly. But things happen. You know, Kareem Jackson. We were talking yesterday. I was telling you, I mean, we don't know.
Right.
Might just be one day. They have, you know, sometimes you have things that come up, happen, and he had a graduation or something. So, look, it's not the biggest of deals, but you want guys there. You don't want guys certainly skipping the whole off season. So is it just 1 or 2 days, 1 week, and then here the rest of the time, or is this a continued thing? You know, when you look at certain guys, certain leaders on the football team, you're trying to establish a culture. You want those guys here to establish your culture. It is a big deal.
Okay. Hackett was asked, any concern about those players not attending OTAs?
In the end, for us, it's all voluntary. I think that's the first starting point for us. It's voluntary. As long as they're getting their bodies right and understanding the system, that's all I can ask. And if they can get here, great.
See? Once again, there it was.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, guys, it's voluntary, so you know we're not going to make them be here. I mean, that's what he's trained to say. It's like you can't say that you're disappointed a guy's not there because they'll run with it. The NFLP, they'll run with that, and next thing you know, you're losing – you know, a week of mini, your last week of mandatory mini camp. They'll take it from you. So it's a fine line.
Do you think that Russell Wilson in particular is a little bit perturbed with players who aren't there? As a franchise quarterback who is there and considers this time of the year important, do you think he's just a little bit perturbed?
I mean, I don't know Russell Wilson. I would have to say yes.
Do you think Peyton would be perturbed? You know Peyton.
That's where I was going next, actually. Good question. Of course. Yes. Huh. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter if it was a receiver, a nose tackle. Like, we're counting on you. Like, why are you not here? So, yeah, absolutely. And if you're Russell Wilson, you're coming here. This isn't play around time. You chose the Denver Broncos because you're trying to win Super Bowls.
There's a sense of urgency.
Right. You can tell with him there's a sense of urgency. Getting together in off season, going to California, doing all these things, starting to lay the foundation down when you could have been kicking your feet up in Cabo.
Yeah.
So
this is like his second act.
Yes. You want it to be a great one. This isn't about just, you know, messing around and just, hey, going 9-8. No, it's about trying to win Super Bowls. There's a expectation here now for him and what he's trying to achieve. So, yeah, I would expect that he probably would be a little bit upset when guys aren't here.
You know who I'm the most disappointed who's not there?
Yeah, I think I do. Look at me in my eyes.
Okay.
Don't blink. Bradley Chubb.
Yeah.
I could see it. I could see it.
I'm disappointed in Bradley Chubb because, now, again, I want to emphasize this as a preface before I give my explanation why. Bradley Chubb being or not being at OTAs, it's not going to lose or win a game for the Denver Broncos. I don't believe that. But as you are trying to reset the culture, as a player who has not fulfilled his initial projection when they picked him fifth overall, when his best season is his rookie season, the Broncos decided to pick up your fifth-year option. That was the most significant financial move so far in his career. And you and I agree that they were always going to do it. You sort of had to do it.
Right.
But at the same time, they also didn't have to do it. He hasn't lived up to the expectation. You're supposed to be a cornerstone of this team. You're supposed to be a leader of this football team. And for him not to show up to OTAs when you have a new defensive coordinator and you're resetting the culture, I'm disappointed that that guy who is supposed to be a leader. Was he a captain last year? I think he was. Yeah, I think he was. Because he was. Remember when he was going back and forth with Garrett Bowles, it was like we had two captains like fighting each other. Anyway,
can't wait for that again this year. You know they're going to be fighting again. You know it.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had like three fights last year, those two.
Yep.
And they go at each other every day.
They have to go in the building and bring Garrett Bowles back out.
Yeah.
He wouldn't come back out for a coach. It literally right. took George Payton to go into the building and pull him back out.
Yes. Classic.
Shows
can't
you
wait
just
for that.
Then the year before, it was it was Courtland Sutton fighting Emmanuel Sanders.
Oh, like, that was a few years ago.
2019, yeah. I think. Because it was Sutton's second year. Emmanuel screaming, "You haven't done bleep in this league." Being physically separated. We've seen some doozies here.
Love it.
But I'm disappointed in Chubb.
Well, how about this?
If he's just choosing to not be here.
Well, Mace was saying he's trying to get his degree.
Okay.
I mean, can you wait till next year to try to get your degree? I mean, like, it's a pretty big year. Like, this is not the off season to get your degree.
I'm pretty sure you can do some stuff online.
I did mine online. Well, my sister did. Shout out, Sean. Bam. Appreciate you.
They had the internet then?
They did. Listen, I'm with you. I don't know about this degree thing. I don't know what he's doing. If he's doing it online, going in school. Don't know if he was just out for one day. Is he going to be out? You know, is he going to be there at all? I don't want to overreact to one day not being there because we don't know.
Yeah.
So is he – but you're right. He needs to be here, plain and simple. It's a big year for him. It's a contract year, new defense. Do you want to stay here beyond this year? Well, you need to start getting that – building those relationships with the coaches and laying that foundation down. And if not, he's –
So you have one edge rusher. You have one edge rusher who can't be out there because he needed surgery, and your other one is just not there.
Yeah,
it's like those are your start. Like those are supposed to be your top producers. Again,
what's your priority? What what's your priority? You know, sometimes that's what you look at as a player. Do you have to be here? No, it's the biggest deal. Like Bradley Chubb, it's not a lot of thinking when you play outside linebacker. Not a ton of it. Go sack the quarterback 90% of the time. And then, if not, you play the run, right? I mean, like those types of things. It's not like making adjustments here or there. I mean, sometimes you drop into coverage, but it's not a ton of thinking, right? It's just not a ton. So, it's not the biggest deal, but what are your priorities? Melvin Gordon, what's your priorities? Do you go back to Wisconsin or wherever? Or do you come back in great shape? Fine. It's not about that, right? It's not about that. Your whole team's here working. Are you a veteran leader here? Did they just bring you back after no one else really wanted you? I mean, so, but once again, like George, you know that was it relayed to him or not? Well, but hey, we need you here. I wouldn't have re-signed him if it wasn't.
Mm.
I wouldn't have done it. I don't know. We'll see if he's a starter or not. But He shouldn't be the starter. It should be Javonte.
It should be.
You're going to sign a veteran backup running back that's not going to come to offseason? Huh?
Who
I put that on George.
Who hasn't been a leader?
Right.
Like, no.
Right. I put that on George, though, ultimately, because you've seen it. You've seen it
play
out. And now you're just going to just allow it to happen again. Now, we'll see. It's just only been one day, right? So we don't know. I mean, he had been around for a little bit.
For conditioning, yep.
So we'll see how it plays out. I don't want to overreact to things, but at the same time, I'm not just going to ignore them.
Yeah. It's National Brothers Day today, so I want to shout out my brother, Jason.
Jace. The one out
in Chicago
in fantasy football. Yes. You and your brother took that beat down.
I got
one brother. You tried
to
pass the buck to him.
Yes,
like, well,
I
don't even look at it. You do, Zach. Yeah, you do.
My brother runs my fantasy team.
Yeah, right.
So happy Brother's Day to all you brothers there, my brother Jason.
Jason.
Okay. Just how much does Russell Wilson use his tight end? And how can that history help us manage expectations from the Broncos tight end room? Take a dive into this conversation coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Just how much does Russell Wilson use his tight end? And how can that very real and tangible history help us manage expectations from the Broncos tight end room?
Well, I mean, I can tell you just – I haven't looked at the stats, and I know y'all did a great job.
It was Dante, not me.
Dante did a great job of coming up with all the stats and stuff. But I, just from thinking about it and not looking at it, just like, oh, does Russell Wilson – did he use a lot of tight end? I would say he didn't. Like, really rely on the tight ends more, the wide receivers. That's what he preferred. Now, then you say, well, did he have one that he loved? Who did he have? I mean, you think of Greg Olsen. You think of the Luke Wilson with the long hair. Other than that, I mean, he had Gerald Everett for a year last year. Then he had Big Jimmy Graham for a little bit. But there was no connection that, like, you look at and you say, wow.
Brady
that
and
was
Gronk.
Magical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kelce, Mahomes. That
right.
was just like, man, he loves his tight end. I would just say just – but also you look and say there was no real great one. I mean, Jimmy Graham, I mean, he's, you know, just not great. He
good,
had some great years.
Good player, yeah.
No, he had some
yeah.
great years, but he was, to me, he's been over the hill now for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
None of the guys that he's had have been really, really good.
So I want to bring that part into the discussion here as we circle back. I'm going to kind of just kind of rifle through this. Russell Wilson has been in the league – for 10 years, and really what the research that Dante Gomez did is, who is the leading tight end producer every year, and what did that season look like? So it's pretty digestible, but I'm just going to rifle through it here. 2021, leading tight end, Gerald Everett, 48 receptions, 4 touchdowns, under 500 yards. The year before that, leading tight end producer, Will Dissly, 24 receptions, 250 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Ooh.
That's a leading tight end producer.
Ooh.
2019, Hollister, 41 catches, 350 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's the leading tight end producer. In 2018, it was Nick Vinette, 29 receptions, 269 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Our guy Nick Vinette.
Correct.
He was here, right?
And then you had... So that guy was like fourth. So like Nick Vinette is the leading tight end producer, but he's like fourth on the team in catches and yards.
Okay.
You go back to 2017, Jimmy Graham. Now Jimmy Graham had 2 years here in 17 and 16, where it's 57 catches, over 500 yards, 10 touchdowns.
He's 15 also.
Oh, in 2015.
Yeah, you got to look at the other page. It's not just like more than one page.
Well,
I'll help you out.
No, but I isolated those 2 years on purpose because these are bigger years.
Oh, okay.
2016, he goes for over 900 yards and 6 touchdowns. That's the leading tight end producer. 2015.
I mean, that's a big year.
That's a big year.
That's a huge year. You know, I didn't put enough respect on it. I didn't realize he had that type of year with Russell Wilson. I mean, 923 yards, 6 touchdowns. It's a huge year.
It's a big year. 2015, Jimmy Graham was the leading tight end producer. He's the fourth leading receiver on the team, but the leading tight end producer, 600 yards, 2 touchdowns. in 2014. It's Logan Wilson, 22 receptions. Is it Luke Wilson? Yeah. Luke Wilson. Excuse me, I called him Logan.
Close enough. Both start with an L.
In 2014, that's the leading tight end producer. 22 receptions, 3 touchdowns. That's number one on the team. 2013, you go back to Zach Miller, 33 receptions, under 400 yards, 5 touchdowns. And then finally, 2012, his first year, the leading tight end producer, 38 receptions, under 400 yards, 3 touchdowns.
And that was his rookie year.
That was his rookie year. Yep.
2012, 13, okay, he's just trying to get a feel of things. And
so I know I just threw a lot of numbers out there. Here's really what the research says. In 2016 and 17, Jimmy Graham was fantastic, those 2 years. The other 8 years, the leading tight end producer is super, super underwhelming. You're talking about 300-400 yards. You're talking about 3-4 touchdowns total. That's what the numbers say outside of 2016, 2017, where Jimmy Graham was, you know, 500-something yards, 10 touchdowns, 900-something yards, 6 touchdowns. Outside of that, dude.
He had a 600-yard season, 900 and a 5. Yeah, okay, 10 touchdowns that 1 year where he had 520 yards. That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. 10 touchdowns is a lot.
For 520 yards.
But outside of that season, no tight end has caught more than 6. And more oftentimes, it's 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
I didn't realize. Now, I knew. I kind of thought like you did.
Right.
Okay, at first blush, okay, Jimmy Graham, but everyone else, okay, I don't think he uses it. But the numbers say that these are below average tight end numbers in today's NFL.
Yes, very much so. But I'll tell you this. This is the way I look at it. If he has a tight end that he trusts and he really loves, he'll feed him. And it was Jimmy Graham. I mean, look. I mean, Jimmy Graham had a 65 reception, 923-yard season. And then the following year, he had 10 touchdowns. 98 targets, 95 targets, 73 targets, all for Jimmy Graham. That's a lot of targets. So I'm not saying that he doesn't like tight ends. I'm saying, hey, if one shows that he can make plays for him and that he trusts, and I remember a lot of those touchdowns, like he'd get Jimmy Graham just box that guy out and he'd just throw him the little fade or you know, those types of plays, which I don't think we have that type of guy here. But if he trusts you, if he likes you, he'll throw you the football. He's not adverse to throwing it to the tight end. Now, is that his number one option? No. But at the same time, if he trusts you and he likes you, he'll go to you. And also, he's had some good receivers. You know, you look at some of those years where here recently where he's had Lockett and Metcalf.
Yep.
Well, they've just been a lot better players than their tight end. So who is he going to look to go to?
The better players.
Right? I don't know. Maybe I'm downplaying it too much and hoping that this is the way it's going to be when he looks at a guy like Dolchich or Albert O, that he develops that relationship and that trust with them that, you know what, hey, we're going to see them be a big part of the offense. And I also think it's scheme a little bit.
Okay.
What type of priority do you put on getting your tight end involved and making him a priority? Some teams more so than others. I don't know what Hackett's offense. I mean, you think more West Coast offense that you're going to feed the tight end a lot.
You would think.
I mean, you saw Robert Tonyan in the last couple of years, never heard of him. All of a sudden, he was like, wow, this guy's really good.
He can play, yeah.
So I think in the West Coast offense, it's a big priority, the tight end position.
There's some follow-up questions that I want to circle back to maybe tomorrow about this current room and how it could sync up with some of the best of those years that we've seen from the tight end that I think are relevant follow-up questions that we can tackle tomorrow. But good conversation. It's something to keep our eye on. Like, at the very least, like, knowing the history before we begin here I think is important. Because we say, like, oh, he hasn't used a tight end much, but what does it actually look like? So I think we're just better informed now moving forward, and we'll be a little bit more maybe sensitive to the topic just in general, actually seeing the numbers. Okay. The Nuggets had their architect walk out the front door for browner pastures but greener pockets. Now what? Take a dive into that conversation with our good buddy James Merrillat next. Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.